Yes. I am calling out to the heavens from a little ball, little soggy ball in the middle of nowhere. I am a soul. I am a monkey trotting upon this soggy ball, looking towards the heavens. I don't even know what the heavens are. I don't even know what I'm looking at. They look like little dots of light. I know now they're stars, but I didn't ever know that when I first started looking at them. I thought they were just little pinpricks of light. And I thought maybe on the other side of them were people watching me or someone watching, and they could do something about my circumstances. I call out to you. Maybe they're on the other side of a partition, like when you're in jail and someone comes to visit you, like maybe your lawyer or someone who's taunting you, or a high school bully who wants to come and rub it in, and you pick up phones on the other side of glass, bulletproof or flexible glass, plexiglass they call it, a bullet glass or something, and say hello, one of us is in prison, and one of us is in prison. Oh, as long as we are separated by that wall, to whom do I call out? I look up, well, because I might as well look down. Why am I not looking down? Maybe there is some sort of entity in the very bowels of the earth who controls my fate. Why do I think it's in this empty space above me? It seems more logical that maybe there is some sort of fiery demon in the great depths of actual hell, a place you could get to if you had a good enough drill. And then you could go down there into the fiery magma. I'm glad, I hope I said that right. And burn up in the rock. Could you imagine a rock burning you? They should introduce that into rock, paper, scissors. Rock, molten rock. Paper, razor paper. Scissors, I don't even know. Rocks, nuclear. They have radiation. So you can cut, go ahead, cut my paper. Come back to me in 20 years when your hand drops off. So everything has consequences, doesn't it? Maybe. I don't know. I used to think that. Now I'm thinking some things may be uncaused or don't cause anything. Who knows? We don't know. They seem like anomalies. For instance, when they say, if a light doesn't hit it, then it doesn't exist anyway, virtually. But I'm thinking things, among things don't exist, are like the sitcom The Super, which I believe Bruno Kirby was in, and you remember him, and that only ran for maybe one season, and I don't know that it had any lasting effects, and it will be forgotten. Maybe once the internet's gone, and after, who knows what's going to happen, mass human extinctions, I think there's five or something, I don't know, I've been looking into the future. The great thing about studying the future is I forget as much of it as I learned as I do the past. So that's when you time travel, it's impossible to win at horse races because you just get everything mixed up. I don't even remember. I forget. Sometimes I forget what horse is in the race right after I bought the ticket. I go, I don't even remember who I bet on. Now imagine you're time traveling and say, I'm going to go make some more money by going into the past and knowing things for sure. Oh, good luck. Everywhere you go, you introduce possibility because you are a forgetting creature. Forgetting is the secret behind variation. Oh, yes. Oh, it's how we mutate things. You make a copy, you forget things. It's like the game, I forget what it's called, Gossip or something like that. Phone call, phone cat? I don't know. I don't remember what somebody said to me. And by mishearing and by distorting, you create a new thing. And then that new thing has a chance because you can't guess at what the future is. You also have to. It's guessing. So to counteract it, to prepare, you have to guess. So the only way, so if you're going to roll dice to pick a number, the best thing I could do is pick up a pair of dice and roll those if I want to match it. That's better than just coming up with one on my own, I think. That's how I approach everything. And that's the secret to my time machine, is it runs on dice. It's fun, but not just any dice. Oh, my goodness, no. There's five dice. And they've got different color dots on them. They come from a Kismet set. That's a game. It's like Yahtzee, but it takes into account color so that you can have a flush. So the flush is the only real difference between the two, right? Or you can two pair same color is a Kismet thing as opposed to Yahtzee. Do you follow me? No, I don't, Hardy. Maybe I haven't even introduced myself to you. I was just convinced that we would be friends if I let you listen into my call out, that my soul makes a phone call every once in a while out into the universe. I don't know if it expects to hear back, just like when we send satellites out, Carl Sagan and his friends sitting around, passing around whatever. I don't know what they called it when he was around. And that puff, puff, postulate is what they would do. And say, I wonder, let's send out some messages to another race of beings. I don't call them aliens because we're aliens to them. Ha, ha, ha. And they'll laugh. And what should we send them? I don't know. Let's send them Chuck Berry or something. Oh, isn't he busy doing stuff? I go, no, his art or something. They did that. They sent Nancy cartoons out into space. That's one of the first things they sent, is Bushmiller's Nancy. Sent it out into space. They carved Nancy's picture on a sheet of gold. Because they knew, first of all, if someone's going to find the gold, they're not going to throw it out. And the alien finds it, go, gold, I found gold! And they bring it back. And Professor Orangutan looks at it and says, what is this face on it? And then they look stuff up and they go, that's Nancy. And they know they can find us on our planet by those clues. Or they'll know, they'll be able to postulate. So when they come here to visit us, they want to look like us. And so they all have that spiky hair. And they're two-dimensional. So I don't know, maybe we should be sending more sculptures. I think if I was going to send something into space, say, I'm going to let you have, if they said, okay, you can have a space the size of a trunk, like a regular travel trunk, like you used to travel with, bigger than a suitcase. You follow me? Like not quite a steamer trunk, like you keep your vaudeville costumes in, but the kind you take on the I'm traveling, I got my trunk. So that's the space I get to send something into space for our time capsule called a space capsule. But they already have something called a space capsule, so I don't know what to call this. Space and time capsule. I don't know what it is. Let's go out into space. That's, we've been doing this for a long time. Send stuff out and go, this is going to, aliens are going to like this. It's the equivalent. We are, as a human race, like that nerdy fella in the college dorm who makes you listen to comedy records. This you got to hear. So that's what we're doing intergalactically. So we're sending out, you have to see this. First of all, here's two naked people. They did that. They sent out a picture. They called all these professionals they consulted. They said, what should we send? And they asked, they asked Richard Feynman and they asked Gloria Leonard. And so they all came up with this. Let's send some naked people. And they did this. And so I'm now participating in, but they see, like I said, they did it in two dimensions. And so they thought it might confuse the aliens. Let's send more sculpture. So they gave everybody a little more room, and this is what I'm going to send. I remember that there's a shop in the mall that sells not only tobacco, but things associated with tobacco, like small statues of John Wayne, who died from its use, or native people riding on horses, or just the horse, or the Three Stooges. And in the particular tobacconist that I'm thinking about, there were three small sculptures. I don't think they were life-size unless the Three Stooges were the size of gnomes, and they sort of were, but either that or maybe Ted Healy was just very tall. But they're this little, oh gosh, how much would you say? 2 feet? 2 feet tall, so not life size, obviously. They look like a homuncular Jesus in the old Renaissance art, though, I wonder. So are these babies or are they small Three Stooges? And I've talked about these sculptures before in my Islarian series. But I think about them a lot because they're real. I'm not making this up. They have the proportions might be off because I misremember things. That's remember. You don't need to say misremember. There's no remember is, it's implied that your memory is misremembered. So I'm just going to take one of them. And then I was like, well, which one is Mo, Larry, and Curly? They don't have a shemp, which is sickening. It's a sickening oversight. And I said, well, there's not four Stooges. Well, like, heck, there isn't. There's seven or something. So anyway, they're not all together at the same time. I'm not going to sit here and argue with you. I love you. I don't want to get into that. Let's just accept this. Which one am I going to send to space? That's the bigger discussion. Am I going to send a small Mo, small Larry, small Curly into space? What are they going to see when they see it? They don't even know what we look like. Maybe they'll think we're this size and everything. Again, they'll show up then and go, look, I just saw the most horrifying thing. What was it? It was a 2-foot Mo Howard. And it was smaller than any human I'd seen. It was like a hobbit Mo Howard. I saw a hobbit Mo Howard, and he had hairy feet. No, he didn't. Now you're making it up. That's the thing. You don't have to embellish it. Just say it's that. I'll believe you. Don't add to it. You're not making it more believe. And then when somebody catches you in that lie, they'll go, oh, there was no collusion or something, because this one associated lie. So I'm thinking maybe Larry, a sculpture of Larry, and should I do anything to it? I was thinking, nah, maybe I'll put little sunglasses on it or anything. I don't know. Paint it a different color. I was thinking stripping it down to the, I doubt it's wood. I doubt these are, whoa, look, it's exotic hardwood under there. I don't think it is. I think maybe they're resin. So, but I wanted to strip it down to the bare wood. I wish they were wooden sculptures, you know, a little cruder. And just give somebody that. I think then if the aliens saw it, again, I know that's an ugly word. If the other people maybe they're not even people. I don't know who we're sending this to. It's so hard to get a gift for somebody if you don't even know they exist or what they look like or whether they have consciousness. I practice by getting gifts for things I'm pretty sure don't have consciousness. So I regularly get things from a couch. And you say, well, that's silly. And I go, no, you do it too. You go, oh, I just got a throw for the couch. Or, you know, I just got a little scent hanger thing for the car. And you do things like a little gift for my car. And unless your car is sentient, and some are, Kit and others, Herbie, then, you know, that might be different. And some can talk back. There's some that transform into robot. I know that's just in fiction, but is it? Because we integrate those things into our reality a bit. You know, who was it that said, and then sometimes it's Gandalf. And you go, well, whoops. I mean, did Gandalf say it? Am I talking about Tolkien? Am I talking about Gandalf? Am I talking about the actor who played him? Who said what? So that's just as real as your grandpa saying it. What if your grandpa gave you some great piece of advice that becomes basically your worldview? You know, my grandfather always told me, blah, 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 blah. Say something specific. I won't want to, and you'll see why. So grandpa says this, and you go, I've lived my whole life around this principle. And then you find out, and it's not only is it not your grandfather, but it's an actor playing the part of a grandfather. And you're not even sure the motivation of why they told you that stuff. I knew the guy came my whole, either I self-delude and ignore that fact, or I let my entire world collapse when I learn that I've based my life on Lord of the Rings or something. I don't buy mistake. Somebody gave it to me. They said, you know, all that book they've been talking about, the Bible. You, yeah. Well, that's this. Is it? It doesn't say Bible. No, that's it. Just live your life by this. All right. That'd be trick somebody like that. Give them a book. Give them some silly book. Winnie the Pooh. Say, this is the Bible. Do all this. And they get their head stuck in a honeypot because you told them that was a religious text. I wonder if that's happened. So I couldn't. Sometimes I like to break my heart because I like it to put it back together again, the way you would a watch. So I'm going to take my watch apart and see if I can put it back together again. Granted, I might need a YouTube video and some tools that I don't yet have, but by taking it apart, I force myself to have to put it back together again. So I break my heart sometimes, and I'm like, I'll worry about its repair later, because it's fun to see what, I want to see what makes it tick. And to do that, I have to shatter it. And I only mean that, of course, figuratively. I mean, I let my emotions, I let things fall apart. I let myself be scared, and I let myself be fearful and scared, and basically, it's basically letting terror in via love. And, you know, there you go. So you break it. I say, well, now, how do I put my heart back together again? And what you do is you find a Star Trek-inspired helmet of knowledge, and you put that on, and it will allow you to do things you never could do just by your own accumulated experience. And what I mean that is YouTube videos. So now I can do it. How do I put it back together again? I will watch pugs play with a squeaky toy or something. That might do it. No, I don't know exactly how to. I forget now. I forget. I'm sorry I broke here. You told me to take it apart, and I thought you were going to help me put it back together again. I'm sorry. I should have planned ahead. But I try not to plan ahead because it's like Scrabble. If you sit there, if your turn is three turns away, and you're like, oh, I'm counting on this word, you're going to be disappointed. You go into a period of just absolute stasis and then just work real fast when it's your turn. That's all. Because if you plan, I'm going to make all these contingency plans. Don't do it. You'll exhaust yourself. Spend the time checking your phone or something, and then when it's your turn again, because circumstances change. And so sometimes you can't always plan. Sometimes you have to you're improvising your entire life. And you say, well, it doesn't feel like it. That's because you learn riffs, I think. This is all talking about myself. This is what I'm doing. Who knows what you're doing? No clue. But I know that when I hear an improvisational solo from James Brown trombonist Fred Wesley, that I'm going to get, he's going to improvise, but I'm going to hear certain Fred Wesley quotes. And I've talked about that before. Bump, that's Fred. And he's going to do all sorts of things around that too. And we learn through in our improvisation, our little bits of script, just like those scripted reality shows. When are we truly ourselves? I guess when we feel like we're not being, there's no surveillance camera in the room. When are we not being watched? I guess that depends on your opinion and your religious background. I don't know who else is in your head or whether you're being watched or whether your behavior is all based on whether someone's going to observe it. Or whether you're observing it. Whenever we talk about ourselves, we say, I can't help myself, or I know what I'm doing. There's always two I's. I know doing. Like you can't, your knowing and your doing feel like two separate things and two separate entities. Is it my body and the software that's imprinted upon it? Oh, who am I? Well, I don't know. I think I am how I was raised in my religion was that my name is Winnie the Pooh, and that I will find fulfillment if I stick my head in a honey jar. Put my hand in there first, though. I never stick my head where I don't first put my hand. That's been a rule I've had for a long time. That doesn't mean that your head is not going to be bitten by a giant catfish. It just means that your hand to be in there with you so you can pick your nose or something. Say, hey, I'm glad my hand's in here in the catfish mouth with my head because I got an itch. And I just did. I made my nose itch by talking about it. If you have mirror neurons, and that is something that you would have purchased between 1976 and 1989 from the Kmart neurology counter, if you currently have those, then a lot of times that you have sort of sympathetic reactions to things, or someone will yawn, you'll yawn, a friend will join a cult, so will you. They start using a certain detergent, you go, that looks good. You go, oh, you go to their house that they lend you, their vacation house, and you go there, and you're alone this morning, and you make coffee, and you're looking, you forgot to get fresh cream, and you go, oh, they have Cremora non-dairy creamer. I think I'll give that a whirl or a try. I don't know what you say. Oh, my friend, it's so good to make a... You're listening in on this phone call. I realize that. I remember when phones were shaped like a weird kind of bone. I don't know if your young folks don't remember that. Now y'all speak into what looks like a wallet or something. Or I don't even know. It's square. It looks like Zweibach. You're speaking into a hefty rye cracker or something. But we used to have these things that look like a bone with a squirrely rope, a bone that's plugged into an amp. Like it's got a squirrely, the twisty kind of wire that like 60s guitar players plugged in with. Except, and you speak into the bone and it, and if you wanted to record that call, you would sometimes get this microphone with a suction cup on it and a wire that you'd stick on the receiver end. I mean, the ear part of the bone. I know this is not making any sense. What is that man talking about? I don't know, honey. We'll switch the channel. I can't. The knob's broken. Hold your ears. Ah, you're kicking out the window. I'm so sorry. I wish the radio would shut off. Get this fella off the radio. He's saying all sorts of things. He's tampering with my thoughts, I believe. The things that you let into your head, they are just like insects that you let into your house. You don't know what they're going to do. Start their own little civilization there. Well, you know, there's benevolent insects. If you let certain ones in, the more legs they have, the more they're going to kill things that menace you. Is that true? No, I don't know. Let's just say that is. I'm using it as a metaphor for what? I don't know. It has to be for something. I've never gotten that about metaphor. I'll say something's a metaphor and people say, for what? And I'll go, I don't know. And they'll go, well, surely you know. I go, well, I don't know. How would I know? Isn't that for others to figure out? Like when somebody watches your movie and they go, oh my gosh, this is about, you know, the human condition, or this is about being born or something. A lot of times a filmmaker will go, oh my gosh, really? I did not know. I think a lot of what comes out is unconscious, you know? So it's nice to see you put two and two together. How revealing. Oh, we reveal so much about ourselves without intending to. Like when we're not wearing a belt. So I feel like that sometimes emotionally we're not, I see that you're not doing anything to keep your pants up, and by pants I mean the artificial you, the you you show the world, and sometimes your butt slips out, the real you, the unvarnished you. Now, I don't know, I've been rubbing varnish on my bottom, because I thought it was something else. What did you think it was? I thought it was icy hot, and it was varnish, and it burned like icy hot, but now my shiny behind, and my behind, and I thought I was, and well, why were you rubbing icy hot on it? Because I was doing deadlifts. I wasn't really. All of this I'm just saying as a what if my glutes hurt right now, and I accidentally rubbed something on. Oh, I thought I was putting a mustard plaster on, but it turned out to be real plaster, and now my butt is stuck in it. I one time decided that I was going to make a rubber mask of my face or something like that, and I needed a plaster mold to do it, and I'm not sure what I was thinking, but I put plaster all over my face. And at the time, I'd seen it done on TV, right, where you stick straws out of your nose. So I think I did that. I think I put straws up my nose. I think I didn't have regular straw. I think I used a crazy straw. Or a straw that had a little spoon on it for an icy. And then I put plaster all over my face. And at the time, I had a beard. And I thought, surely, if I put Vaseline on top of the beard, the plaster will not permeate that. Well, that is not true. And the plaster went, it just does what lava or water does. You know, it finds little crevices and it goes in. So it found its way around each and every hair of my beard and froze all of my beard and all of my facial hair and my eyebrows and everything into it. So I set, what I did is I took every hair on my face and I set it into plaster and waited for the plaster to dry and harden and burn. It burns when it dries. And I thought, wow, you know, I think it's time to get this off. This will slide off because of the Vaseline. And it did not come off. And I realized that I had done a very terrible thing. And I was starting to, I had to calm myself because I thought now would not be the time to panic. You know, panic is sometimes a luxury. It's something that if you don't have a plaster, if your face is not stuck in plaster, you can panic. You can panic, and it's not, sometimes there's no consequence. But this, I was thinking, there might be a limit. Who knows about my oxygen supply? I don't know about these snow. What if I, you know? So I calmed down and started to break the plaster off. Some of it came off. It came away from my eye, ripped it away from my eye, ripping out, tearing out a lot of my eyebrows. But I had one eye exposed, and then I looked like the man in the Iron Mask or something. It was terrifying. And then sometimes when we try to solve our own problems, we make them worse. And I decided now that I had some of it exposed that way, if I could work some water into the situation, the water will soften the hardened plaster. It doesn't. And that'll do it. And so I stepped into a shower. So now as I think I was nude and my face was encased in plaster. So it was getting worse, the situation. And then I turned on the shower and started to drown myself. Because what happened is the water went in there and it just took up all the space between my plaster and my flesh. And now I had put my face underwater. So, and then it went up into my nose and I started to drown. I couldn't spit it out of my mouth. It was all blocked off. It was pretty horrible. You say, well, why didn't you call anyone? Well, we didn't. It was kind of pre-cell phone, I think. People had cell phones, but they were gigantic. So it wasn't that everybody had one. We had a regular phone. I don't know where it was. And so I just started ripping it off of my face, pulling my beard out by the roots as if I were one of those czars that ordered everybody, you know, that a law against beards. Do you remember reading that in People's Almanac? They say one of the czars said no beards. And so then they started ripping everybody's beards out with pliers. I read that. For sure I read it. And I think it was Book of Lists, or People's Almanac, one of them, by Irving Wallace and Dave Wallachinsky. That was, we used to call that the internet. That was what I called that. I had those books. I said, I know everything. I can win a trivia contest. And they go, why? I said, I have secret books of knowledge. But it was those. Now you can use your looks up stuff on this phone, which we couldn't before. Oh, the old times. Let me tell you about the very old times. There's times even before that. A lot of things happened before I was born, and how do I know about them? Besides time travel, just time travel, and also reading. Ba-dum-bum. You should. Are you interested in books? Hi, I'm Hardy White. When I like to know a fact or something, I think about books, and then I look it up on the internet, and I think about how much time that saves, because we go to the library, might not be in the library. Like, I remember, you know, I had an interest in the Three Stooges and know about the Rich Brothers and everything. And you go, oh, go to your public library. Well, they don't really have those kind of books. Those were all in the TV section of the bookstore. So I sort of had to buy a lot of books if I wanted to research, to start my research. And I did. I was doing, you know, a lot of kids are precocious with science and everything. So I was doing science experiments. Well, I was learning my history of just a performance comedy and all old ancient comic acts and everything like that. And I wanted to learn about it because I thought I would, when I was little, I'd watch Merv Griffin and something. I'd say, man, I could be me. And I don't want to be in that spot and not know anything about who somebody is. You know, like, oh, you want to book Jock Mahoney? And I go, oh, and I go, no, yeah, you would. I think he was Tarzan. He was in a Three Stooges as Jock O'Mahony. So now I know that. That I may know from the Richard Lamparski, Whatever Happened To. Or is it Whatever Happened To, What It Became Of, What Are They Are Now, Is So-and-So Old? That's what I would have called the series. Is That Lady Dead? Is a good book title. I need to go through. But now, again, you've got internet or telepathy. Can help you answer those questions. Or not. If you don't care, you always have the answer. Remember that. If you abandon, your standards and truth and reason, you will always have the answer at your fingertips. Anything, you reach out and you get it. And that's the answer. Say, well, prove it. You go, nothing can be proven. And then you're fine. There you go. You live in that world. Now me, I don't know. I'm not sure. I think I do a mixture of that and actually having to prove something to myself. But my standards are pretty low, and I'm not real bright. So apparently I believe a lot of things that are wrong, and I don't know which ones those are. I'm assuming a lot of them, because I also know my perception is very weak. I see things dimly. It's like looking through a glass darkly. It is. It's true, though. You know, I'm not sure even what I see. And so I miss things. I was having this discussion with a friend, and remember the time when I was about 12 years old and I was out on a boat, a small boat, a 32-foot Chris Craft, kind that pops through the intercoastal waterways of South Florida. And on my grandfather's realtor friend, Ed. So my grandfather took me out with Ed and we're just gonna, I don't know, they just went out and went back again. In the boat. I go, why do you have a boat? They didn't know. But one time it was at nighttime, and maybe we were coming from a restaurant or something, and I had to use they call it the head, which I'm uncomfortable with. So I went down there, it was very dark, and I could not find the light of the head. But I saw there before me the commode and its dark vacuity, and I knew that I must then pee into this dark space. So I started to go, and I did not hear the sound that I'm used to hearing. That, you know, the dripping in a bucket sound, that little echo of water on water. What I heard was that sound when the shower's dripping on the washcloth or something. You go, that's not right. And what had happened is that I did not notice that the seat was down and covered with a dark, what I later discovered, was a dark brown terry cloth seat cover. The kind that, for some reason, that used to be very, it might not even been terry cloth, it might have been like shag carpet, I can't even tell you, the fur or something. People used to cover their toilet seats for whatever reason. Well, I also like to use it as a chair for clipping my toenails, or I don't even know why. I go, oh, just that bare seat, it makes me uncomfortable. Are you sitting on it? No, it's just that it needs to have a towel on it. So this was closed, and I didn't see the I would have seen that it was white, you know, would have reflected the very little light or moonlight or whatever was reflecting into the head of that tiny boat. But I didn't. And then, you know, I've stopped, but not soon enough. So now I had this pea-soaked cover to reckon with. And it's a sort of Schrodinger's embarrassment cat. Because as long as I don't leave that room, I can't really be embarrassed. So I'm both embarrassed and not embarrassed at the same time. Because at that point, nobody has seen it. I know there's nothing I can do about it. It's not like I don't have anything to magically absorb the water. I can't undo what I have done. I can't even disguise what I've done, really. I guess I could try to throw the thing out of the, to go, oh, you know, toiletry overboard or something, and throw it, shove it through the little porthole. But I knew that, you know, and there's nothing I could do to stop this inevitable thing. But I also realized that at that moment, there was nothing to be, if it was just me alone in the universe, there would be nothing to be particularly embarrassed for. I mean, I don't like to go around. If it was my boat and I was alone, I don't want to pee on my own things, but there's a big difference than peeing on your own possessions and then peeing on someone else's if they don't ask you specifically to. And so I don't know what happened when I opened that door. If we were doing a movie, the door would open and it'd be just like Tony Soprano. You just look up and that's it. Then they play, "Don't Stop Believing," and you never know whether Ed got mad at me for peeing all over his seat cover. There you go. That's misperception. I depend so much on light. And not just light, it's not even how we see. I have many friends who are not sighted and certainly perceive the world. And they misperceive it as deeply as we do, who are sighted. Oh, all your the way you interact with the world, you're so limited, no matter what. Even if it's, and it is all interior, at the end of the day, is it not? It's all happening on the inside. That's why I like to, I'm sorry, but you left your ear door open, and I wandered in. I wandered in like a strange old man or a, what else wanders in? Bears, raccoons looking for cat food, dog food. So I'm a kind of a raccoon person, and I've wandered in to your head because your ears are hard to shut. You've got to like put your fingers in them. Close your eyes. You can pinch your nose. You can stick your fingers in your ears, but you can't stick. Yeah, you can stick your fingers. Your nose and your ears, you have to use your hands. End of story. So sometimes, in the time it takes you to get your hands up to your ears, I can sneak in. And then once I'm in, it doesn't matter whether you like me or not. Gosh, how much is in your head that you detest? How many images, how many characters are in there? Some of them you've created, some of them are based on real people or historical figures, and they're in there and saying things and doing things, and it's like some twisted, strange TV world, Mayberry, or some crazy place with people that look like you doing weird things and saying things. I don't mean Mayberry looks like you. I mean your own world that's you tailored. That's what I meant to say, because Mayberry is a very, say, oh, I look like white Scotch Irish people. No, that's not what I meant. Whatever your world is should look like you. You're in there. It's just you in there. Hello, friend. And me, being respectful. Because I understand what you must be going through. And I try to let myself feel it. And I think I do. Because when I let myself understand other people's grief or suffering or anything, I start to feel sad or bad or distressed when my condition is not so. Therefore, I know that I'm perceiving something, or I'm having some sort of feeling that's based on their experience. And it can be triggered in art or just them sharing it with me or anything. And I can feel things I can be scared when there is no real fear. I can be joyful when there's no real thing there to trigger it. I can be fooled into all my emotions, or I can fool myself into doing them. And I can have some of them just by being perceptive or letting my heart feel things. And I try to do that with other people so that I do not contribute to their suffering anyway. And that, to me, is not a philosophical stand or a moral one. It's just a gut thing. Is I, you know, if you open yourself a bit, if you open the eyelid that's protecting your heart, if you remove the protective cover from your heart. I went a long time having a washer and dryer not knowing that there was like some kind of plastic film covering all the dials to keep them fresh, and I left that on. And when I took it off, it shone, it looked better. The thing looked like it was meant to be. And that's a terrible analogy. But there's a protective cover on the, oh, I know what it is. When the black walnuts drop off the tree, they got an outside husk. They don't just look like the regular walnuts in the store. You've got to get to that by taking the husk off of your heart. And then when you do, you have a sort of way of seeing things. And it lets in all sorts of reactions. And I feel like you can see more colors. But, gosh, the more you see, the more you have to reckon with. So if you open your eyes and you suddenly see something walking towards you, you now have to deal with that. I guess you can close your eyes again or look away, and you'll be surprised when it gets here. But if you see it coming, then you have to think about it. And I don't mind doing that because my time here is finite, of course. And other people, I enjoy this experience more when they do that. And when I have their compassion and when they're kind or patient with me or understand that I could be dealing with something or I might have pain that's not immediately noticeable. And I think there's nothing wrong with that, being gentle with folks. It doesn't mean that you're not going to ever defend yourself or that you're weak or, you know, my gosh. Cats are like that. You pet a cat and you never think, oh, this cat, by letting me pet the cat, this stupid, helpless cat, you still realize this cat could mess me up. It's choosing not to. We're doing a mutual thing. You're enjoying stroking the cat. The cat is enjoying being stroked. But it does not mean that the cat could not absolutely shred your face. So I have respect for all my fellow creatures, my sibling humans. And I always take their gentleness and their peace as a gift. And I try to reciprocate so that we don't have to scratch one another's eyes out, which is not something that could, it's something that could happen, and it's not something I desire. I do not want to live in the world of clawing eyes out. What's it? What's the world called? Clawing eyes out. Clawing eyes. I want to write science fiction so I can make actual planets name things like that. Where are we going next, Doctor Who? To the planet clawing eyes out. Oh, it means, what are you saying? They've done that too on the, these people are not, it's the future, and we used to call them researchers, and now they're called Ra-Sasars or something. But they're not really a people, they're just a profession that's been abandoned on their space station too long. Isn't that amazing? So yes, what are they? They used to be called information something. Oh, a minute. Never mind. Abandon. I forget what things are called. I'm going to make a joke out of that. No, you're not. You're not because you don't remember the word that you're going to do wordplay on. That's difficult. That's difficult to accept. Goodbye, everybody. No, as I fade away, I imagine my... gosh, it's probably already happened. So I've been listening to you for years, Hardy, and it seems like maybe... I don't know. You're just... What? Well, I don't know. You just changed. How about change? What's going on? It's okay. It's not worth mentioning. What? What happened? You probably did it on purpose. Did what on purpose? What's happening? What am I not noticing? How do I know? Have I changed? Do I seem dumber? Do I seem vaguer? Am I repeating myself? Well, it's just that... What? What? Please tell me. No. Oh. I know that I have changed. I know that... But as I live my life, that I keep The past me keeps dissolving into sand, and the future me isn't made yet, and it's so strange. It's so strange to slowly dissolve away the ends of your life. So what did I do at 6 or 7? Where are my memories? Just little pieces. I know I was there, but do I? I know I was doing these things. People go, remember 19? And you go, no, I don't know. What? Jog my memory. I know I was there all the time. How vague it is really never going to stop fascinating me. So you can remember a lot. So you think that, I know I can remember a lot. You can. But you remember such a fraction of things that you perceived at the time, and it's just not there. It's just not there. Maybe you didn't notice it, didn't stick, dissolved, you smoked or drank it away, and it just plain old isn't there anymore. And then you think, I might have been misperceiving things at the time. What if I didn't have my glasses on, and I read something, and I thought it said Prince, and it said prompt. And for years I thought it said Prince, and really said prompt. And then I forgot about that thing altogether. So I forgot something that wasn't even true to begin with. So a lot of what you've forgotten already was never even true, so don't sweat it. Oh, my goodness, say I lost my favorite ring. I tell you, that wasn't a real ring. It wasn't real. So if you lose a diamond ring, turns out it wasn't a diamond, you didn't lose a diamond ring. How about that? Oh, what do you mean? I'm not sure. But someone told me that the other day. They said, what if I stole something from you and then told you it was worthless? I'd say, that's a good, excellent strategy. And I said, yes. And then that's how I got into show business. And so if you accept that, oh, my goodness, bless you, I'm with you. I won't go anywhere. Don't go anywhere, Hardy. I'm not going anywhere. I'll sit here with you when everyone else is taken off. I'm so lonely. Don't be lonely. I'm right here. I'm right here. What do you want me to do? You want me to sing to you a little bit or tell you a story? Tell me a story. No, I refuse. I'm sorry. Name something else. Rub my forehead. Can't. It's radio. Third thing, could you get me something to drink? Can't do that, really. It's really restricted to talking, so ask me to talk about something. Tell me a story. Oh, I'd love to. I will tell you a story. What do you want it to do? You want it to be? What do you want it to be about, necessarily? I would like to be evocative.
Okay.
Of 1001 Arabian Nights.
Oh, like a Scheherazade thing.
Yes.
So Aladdin and the Lamp.
Yes.
Once there was a person like yourself.
What's that like?
I don't know who's listening, so I don't want to say young person, old person. I don't want to gender you. I don't want to anything. I don't know who's listening. So it's just a person like yourself, something with consciousness, like yourself.
All right.
So just imagine yourself. It's you, all right, in this story.
But I don't remember doing it.
You don't? I'm telling you about it. That's why I'm telling you, because you don't remember. That's why I'm telling you the story of the time that you stole this magic lamp from these thieves. But now I'm getting ahead of myself.
If I stole something from thieves, does that not make me a thief myself?
Do you need me to tell you the story? Or are you a smarty pants? And you think you know the story already.
But it's about me.
Exactly. Why would you know anything about yourself? That's weird. So you or someone just like you was walking around. I don't think they had very much. But they weren't feeling sorry for themselves, because maybe they didn't know they didn't have very much. And then they saw some thieves coming and said, you hid behind a rock.
I hid behind a rock.
Yes. And the thieves walked up to a huge rock on the side of a mountain.
Keep going.
And they said to the huge rock on the side of the mountain, they said, open sesame.
What?
They said, oh, it's the Middle East, sesame, the big on sesame, tahini, all that sesame, mostly sesame, not peanut. Here they'd say open peanut. But they say open sesame because they got all their, or sesame, maybe they're saying. That's a Popeye would say. Say open sesame. And the rock rolled out of the way.
Like Jesus.
Jesus didn't say open sesame though, but the rock,
what did he say?
He didn't have to say, I don't think he said anything. I don't know what rolled the rock out of the way, where it's a different story.
All right.
So the rock rolls out of the way, and all the thieves, there's 40 of them. These 40 thieves, Alibaba and the 40 thieves.
Wait, it's 41?
What?
41 guys, Alibaba, 40 thieves, 41.
I always thought Alibaba was the 40th.
No.
Really?
Ted Healy and the Three Stooges.
Oh, okay.
That's how they do it.
All right. Okay.
Diana Ross Supremes.
Right. But that's not a number. That's not in the Three Supremes. Just go on. So these all these thieves go in there, and because that's their hideout, and where they keep their, that's their cash. Like C-A-C-H-E.
Like cachet.
No, it's different. That's like clout or something or whatever. I got cachet. So
I thought it was just French cash.
Nope. They keep all their stuff there. So there's all these piles of golds and all that, what have you. So they go in, they put down all their booty. It's funny you're not commenting on that. So they let all their booty down. They put the booty in piles, big booty piles. Big pile, booty pile they put there. No comment? And then they leave. Now, as they leave, the door starts to slowly close. And as it's slowly closing, you, little tiny you run.
Why am I little?
You're just your size. Then you run into the cave before the door shuts. And so you get in there, and the door shuts. And you're locked in a dark cave and you can't see anything, any of the things, and you perish.
I don't like that.
Round two. You get to do it over again because it's like live, die, repeat with Tom Cruise. So second time through, you bring a torch. And you look around the room and there are piles of gold.
Booty piles.
The booty have piles and booty. I know, it's okay. Whatever entertainment you get out of things, I'm not going to begrudge you butt jokes. That's dumb. If you want to talk about hemorrhoids, all I have to say is hemorrhoids or something. Oh, by the way, in the Bible, they have golden hemorrhoids. Because at one point, I forget who God cursed or anything, but he cursed them for stealing the Torah. I think that's what happened. They steal the Ark of the Covenant, these people, and he gives them hemorrhoids. And to atone, they have to give the ark back, but then they have to give them golden hemorrhoids. Gross. I guess they're made out of like, what is that? Is that a pecan? Is that a golden pecan? No, it's my pile. I made it out of gold. I actually took a plaster Paris. They don't call it that yet. Plaster Palestine mold of my butt, and then I made out of gold. I made this, and now the Lord is appeased. Oh, I thought I was going to have to stick my head in a honey jar. No, friends, I call out. Oh, my soul calls out. It's in a state of confusion, agony, and bemusement. And so I know that's an odd cocktail, but it's a confusing situation when I'm sad and then I'm happy and then I'm bewildered, and I'm convinced I've figured things out, and then it's gone again. It's a lot like smell. A smell wafts past. And you smell it, and you go, what is this very delicate smell? Is that tea olive? It's very fleeting. And you smell it again, it's not there. What's that all about? Yes. Oh, wait for it to waft by. Smell it, you can't quite identify it. Ah, I don't know these things, these surroundings. What are they? They are mysterious to me. I'm sure they have explanations. And I will search for them, but I will also be content to float in this wonderful confusion and not knowing. And there are some situations that it's not worth having preconceptions. And one of them are radio shows. So when I listen to something, I shouldn't have an idea of what to expect. If I have expectations, I will be disappointed. There is nothing I can do. If you have imagined this show and all the things I'm going to say already, the chances of me saying those things are remote, almost nil. We'd have to jump to another possible world where the thing that you imagine completely 100% corresponds to the thing that I do. That will never be the case, because the thing that I do never corresponds to the thing I imagine. Can you imagine that? That's crazy. Oh, I don't know what I'm going to see, but I know that if I think I know, I won't see the real mystery. I won't see the real things floating by. I'm going to miss them because I'm looking for something. If I'm looking for something large, I'll miss the very small. If I'm looking for something very small, I'll miss the very large. If I'm staring into the mid-distance, then I'm going to be able to solve the magic eye puzzle in the newspaper. To slightly cross my eyes and hope for the best, and then the image will come into focus. Oh, my friends, just to have your affection at all and walk on this earth and say, Hardy, I enjoy spending time with you. It's okay that you spoke on the radio like that. It's okay that you took all your thoughts, normally things that you put in little boxes and you put in your closet and you keep that are precious to you, that you were scattering them around like seeds. Why would you do that? I guess because I'm foolish, but thank you. Thank you for not exploiting my foolishness. Thank you for collecting them and picking them up. We better pick these up. We better pick these things up. I don't know if you really meant to scatter them around like that. And you take them home. Maybe you plant them. Do that. Keep them safe. Oh, I hope that our antennae start vibrating in sync a little bit just for that wonderful feeling of connecting with other human beings. If you're listening to this radio show and you've made it this far, then we have created a connection, I think. I don't know why. It's something between a mindless video, playing a mindless video game, the way that makes you feel, and having a intimate connection with somebody around a campfire. It's somewhere, it's halfway between that, I think. And that's okay. That's what I'd like to wrap up and give to you. That's what I would like to take this crazy language, these thoughts, that I'm convinced that language and thought, all my thought pattern, are vaguely parasitic. I know that they wouldn't exist, they can exist without my brain. They sort of hop to other ones, just parts of them. But, you know, they're exploiting my brain and getting all this out of me that normally wouldn't if it wasn't for language, this strange thing that links us. You're hearing my words and understand them. I hope there are also listeners who do not speak the same language that I don't understand English, so that it's just rhythm or sounds to them. I'd like that very much. If you have a friend, if you'd like to get a friend who doesn't speak English turned on to the show, I'd really appreciate it. I think they'd enjoy it. I know it's not music, but it isn't. Isn't it? No. Isn't it, though? No. Isn't it? Isn't it? No, but it's great to have that argument. It's nice to have the argument. So moot is not a bad. Oh, moot. Moot is misunderstood. It means moot. It doesn't mean don't do it. It means, you know, we're going to go back and forth. We're not going to reach a conclusion. It's just for the sake of argument. And isn't everything. You are listening to WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope 91.9 in Rockland County in New York City, New York, and online. WFMU.org worldwide. Thank you so much for joining me, and I will see you again next week.
Gates Avenue, Tompkins Avenue. Transfer to B43. Please exit through the rear door. Tompkins Avenue. Transfer to B43. Rear door.
Hello. Hello, hello, hello. Hi, this is Bailey, and you're listening to Mahogany on WFMU. Thank you for tuning in. That there was, I think I played it on here before, but that was this band that was singing on the bus. I was going to work in Crown Heights, but he was catching the spirit, so I thought it'd be appropriate to play today. Thank you for listening.